Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce, and this, as always, is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. On this episode of the podcast, we'll be talking to CEO and co-founder of Galvia AI, John Clancy, about how artificial intelligence can change the way that we do business. Galvia is an AI company that provides a platform to help businesses unify their data, make predictions, and drive smarter decisions about the future. In addition to the conversation we're having in a moment, John will be speaking at this year's Innovation and NPD Showcase at October 21st at the National Football Museum in Manchester, alongside the six shortlisted entries that have been chosen by an expert panel of independent retailers. If you haven't booked to attend yet, we're almost at capacity with the venue, so get your tickets secured as soon as possible. Let's get into the main event then, and my conversation with Galvia AI. One of the things I hear a lot from retailers at the moment is about AI, the impact of AI, and how it could potentially change a lot of retailers' businesses. To demystify some of that and to highlight the ways that AI can benefit a business, I'm really delighted to be joined by John Clancy, co-founder and CEO of Galvia AI. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good. Good to be here.
Excellent. So, I mean, AI is obviously a massive buzzword. It's a really big it's a big potential change for everyone that's dealing with not just retail but anything, and there are so many levels and layers to the things that AI can do. I think the first question that the retailers would be asking is, especially those that have been in the business for a long time, do I need to be tech savvy to be making use of AI? Do I need to have, you know, a degree in computing? Do I need to have C++ programming? What's the entry point for someone dealing with AI in their business now?
I think the simple answer, Chris, is no, you don't have to be tech savvy. You know, that's why a company like ours exists, is to take that heavy lifting from you. You know, if I look back on our journey in retail, you know, our first retail client in this space, their CEO, when I met him, they're a family owned business, 30 years in existence, a pet food chain across Ireland. They've got 14, now 15 stores. His first words to me were, "I don't own a laptop." He said, "Well, I do own a laptop, but I don't like opening it.
Sure.
And I don't believe in any of this AI." And it was at a breakfast event. And I said, "Okay." And then I got up and gave a talk. And then I sat back down. And he said, "Well, you really embarrassed me there." And he said, "Look, will you follow up? Here's my card." And we followed up. And about 3 weeks later, we signed them as a client. Because the way we like to look at it is that every retailer is generating enormous amounts of data, mm-hmm. from their EPOS systems to all of the various tools that are underpinning the running of their business, whether large or medium or small. But to them, you're generating so much data that you have to start leveraging this data. And when everyone talks about AI, I mean, it is quite, there's a lot of noise. There's no doubt there's a lot of noise in AI. But what do people really want? You know, they want to, how can I use this technology to increase my revenue? How can I use this technology to make me more efficient, to reduce my costs? And that's what we do with real practical examples. Instead of, you know, talking future gazing around AI, because a lot of people like to talk about what's coming. You know, when you boil it all down, it's all machine learning, mm-hmm. you know. And if you look at it, machine learning's job is to find you, as a business, the right answer. You know, generative AI's job is to find you the most creative and possibly plausible fake answer.
Sure.
And that essentially is the difference. And look at it, forget about the technology. Look at it with the lens of, can this increase my revenue line in my business, or can this reduce my operational costs in my business? And if that, start with the problem and then work back from there.
Okay, that's a really good jumping off point. So give us a bit more about specifically Galvia, and for a convenience store, for an average convenience store, or a chain of convenience stores, if they're thinking, okay, we've got, as you said, an enormous amount of data. We might even have EPOS data, loyalty data, mm-hmm. have all of these things together, you know, data on ordering, all that sort of thing as well. What's then the step? How does Galvia AI come in at that point, and what are the kind of changes you could expect?
Well, for every retailer, it's different. They'll have a different problem statement, or they'll have a different, let's say, kicking off point. But for most retailers, it's, I'd like to know a single source of truth. I've invested money in whatever systems are underpinning your business. So keep those. We're not there to replace anything. You know, think of us as like the AI plumbing in your business. So we use handshakes, called REST APIs. So we pull information, daily information that's coming from your business, from whether it's you've got cameras in store to your inventory management, to your tills, to your EPOS, all of the data that you are currently looking at to make decisions. And we put it into one place and we build machine learning models for our clients that have a connected view across all of these systems. So you're not making decisions in isolation. Because every vendor will tell you, whether you have five systems or 25 systems running from finance to operations to logistics to procurement to purchasing, running your business, there'll be little pieces of AI sitting in each one, but all operating in a silo, in a data silo. Now, that's no good. As a retailer, I, and a lot of our retailers, as a kicking off point, want to know, tell me right now, I want a one view, like a dashboard of my business. Whether you have one store, five stores, 25 stores, show me what is my year on year right now. What is my average order value? My amount of transactions today, the amount of my lifetime value of my clients. I want to know right now. Show me my KPIs. It may be you want to, you know, pit off one store against another store. Show me which stores are growing, which stores are not growing. What product items are beginning to move in some stores? So it's that simply one view of what's happening in the business. And then predictions. You know, we cut our teeth. We're 7 years in. We started off in the world of AI back in 2018, which is the dark ages, way before. So we're a machine learning company at our core. And that just means we're numbers. We understand every piece of data that's generated is numbers.
So give me an example of something that would be predictive for a retail business then. Because, I mean, that's kind of the grail, isn't it? It's anticipating trends, anticipating changes. I mean, at its most basic level, retailers are always looking at weather forecasts a couple of weeks in advance and ordering on that basis. What is the power of those predictive models?
It's finding hidden insights the human eye would not pick up. And it's when we talk about a connected view, you know, if we our business is predicting the future. You know, we do this for global. We've done this for Nestle. We've done it for global, large scale enterprise. And we're bringing this 7 years of learning to the retail space to say if the model begins to see, because now we're deployed across numerous retailers, we can it begins to learn trends on your data, because this is deployed within your own system. There's no call outs to the wider world. Your data is within your own IT system. No data leaves, but it learns how your business is performing. And then it starts to make predictions from a revenue perspective. So if it sees certain trends, there will be anomalies. You know, all of these are kind of factors are built in. But if it starts to see a trend in one store, this may lead, it may send an alert to say, based on what we're seeing here, this is going to translate to other stores. You have X inventory in your warehouse today. There's a lead time of 3 months on that particular item or that SKU. You need to order that now. And the beauty for retailers is in 2 months' time or 3 months' time, they can retrospectively look back and say, was that prediction actually accurate? And that's the beauty about looking at the numbers, because the data won't lie. You know, data is very predictive. And if we get it right, then people begin to see, okay, there's something in this.
So help me understand this then. So the data for a business is ring-fenced with the machine learning model. Is that to say then that the model is predicting similar things for different businesses? What I'm trying to understand is if you've got two identical businesses, would they have then identical predictions? Would the model learn in the same way, even if it's not, I guess, talking to itself?
There's a lot of commonality, but there will be a number of other factors, you know, demographic factors, geography factors. You mentioned the weather. There's lots of other factors, time of year, you know, in budgetary life cycles from a macro point of view, salary days. There's lots of other factors that are built into the model because we have learned this. But it is specific to your business.
Okay.
When we deploy something for each of our clients, we deploy a digital asset. You know, we don't share it, it's theirs. So if they're not, and all we do is get better. It is a journey, number one. It's change, number two. But it's transformative from even the mindset, the collateral benefits here, because it changes people's mindset within the organization that AI is not, you know, it's not coming for my job. This is just maths. This is like, this is maths. Mm. You know, we have very smart people in our business, but a lot of them are mathematicians that begin to look, you've got questions, and we just see, do the answers lie in your data? Mm. And if it does, then we start an engagement, we build something for our clients, it's theirs, we can deploy it within our own cloud, they can deploy it within theirs. But that journey, it doesn't, once it's deployed, that's the start of your journey. Yeah. Then it's about tuning it, getting it sharper, better. Oh, that's not right, because it won't be right all the time. We work at about 92% accuracy because we have such a long track record in this at super scale. You know, we do this across continents, across 52 countries for some of our clients. So we understand what to look for within the data.
Mm. And so we survey retailers all the time, and the penetration of EPOS has been getting higher and higher, but there are still, among some independent retailers, some that don't use it. Up to 1 in 5 fully independent retailers are not using EPOS data. For a case of a retailer that is, I don't know, handing on to the next generation, and you've got a you know, young, ambitious retailer coming in saying, right, I want to do absolutely everything I can to get growth in this business. I don't have years of historical data. I'm starting kind of from scratch because it's been done on instinct up till now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a barrier? Can you start from a standing start and get value out of that kind of platform?
Well, one of the misnomers about AI is that you need large data sets to create any type of output.
Mm.
But you don't. The answer is you simply don't. And the fact that we have built a learning and an understanding, is it going to be perfect in the first 2 or 3 months in your business? No.
Sure.
Because there are nuances. You know, 75% of our platform is out of the box. The other 25% is nuanced on your business, mm. where you are, the type of business, the type of clients you have. You know, and if you don't have an EPOS, surely you're recording that information, your daily transactions somewhere. Yeah. And if that is, even if you're actually physically writing them, I mean, if you don't have spreadsheets, it can, like, AI is able to consume all types, take photographs of it. It can take numbers out of photos, out of PDFs. That's what we would call unstructured data. And 95% of everything on the planet is Excel, PDFs, PowerPoints. It's unstructured.
Sure.
And that was a challenge in the past for machine learning and AI. It's not anymore.
And do you think retailers we talk to all the time, particularly independents, they spend a lot of time in the business, and they want to spend more time on the business, more time developing the business. When I talk to people, it's very easy to get into, we talked about generative AI, to get into a bit of a sort of ChatGPT, Sora, Gemini's kind of spiral, where you just get a bit obsessed with it and testing and kind of testing the fences. Is this the same kind of thing, that you can get a bit sort of lost in potential insight, or is this a productivity measure? What I'm trying to say is this an additional thing where it's like, I've got this incredible wealth of information and I'm not quite sure where to start, and there's just so much I could do? Or is it like, oh, I've just saved myself 10 hours a week because I don't have to worry about that side of the business anymore?
Yeah, there's two sides to it. One is the time saving and the automating of routine, boring tasks that people don't want to do. You know, as an example, one of the modules that we're launching next month is a smart rostering module within our platform, because nobody likes to do rotas. Mm. You know, and anyone that's doing a rota, especially if you have multiple store locations, it can be the store manager that's doing it, and they're just going to rota up to the budget. Instead of getting an AI, AI loves this type of data because it's numbers, people, start, finish. It's time series data. It's the data that it absolutely loves. But no one's looking at, when they're doing a rota or a schedule for the week ahead, it's easy to look back, but the money is spent. You know, if you've gone 5% over, 8% over, it's gone.
Sure.
But where, if you're able to, and that's the beauty, but that's why I really like this particular module, is that if you're spending €1,000 this week on your staff costs, and then you're able to get an AI that will generate the roster, but not just based on the what it's predicting from a sales perspective, but also based on, don't give those 20 hours. If you give that extra hour to that employee, they're going to go over the threshold. They'll pay more tax. You'll pay more employer's tax. Mm. It's just optimizing. So before you had the module, you were spending 1,000 a week. After the module, 950 a week, 945 a week, And it's those incremental savings with human oversight, because it'll just present the roster to you and say, here's what we think is the best roster for next week. And you're like, oh, that's wrong or that's right. And then click save, done. Instead of spending an hour, 2 hours looking at that, like it, that is something that an AI in particular can easily do for a business.
And so based on the people you've spoken to so far, I guess the clients you've got, your experience in the in this market, I still feel like we're so early in this. I mean, you said you've been working on this since 2018, and we're sort of early doors on that. And you know, if you look at the Gartner hype cycles on this, we're still very much in on the way down into a bit of a trough of disillusionment, and people sort of thinking it can do more than it can, or not really getting the most out of it. How do we match people's expectations with what these kind of platforms can do, especially in the retail space?
I think that trough of disillusionment that you talked about, it's a healthy thing, because you know, this is not going to listen through your skin. This is not going to do crazy things that people think that AI can do. It is maths at the end of the day.
Sure.
You know, this is a machine learning to predict outcomes, to automate workflows. And I think if you ground it in, here's where we're going to start the journey. We're going to give you this. You will have a one view of your business. You will have a predictive view 3 months out, 6 months out of what's going to happen in your business. We will give you prompts to help people that are running your stores to, because the beauty is from, you know, how you lay out the store, the planograms. A lot of retailers would have very specific, you know, real estate on their shelves. Mm. You know, it will suggest move that from here to over there, because we can see how people, a lot of stores have cameras. They've got like, they can see heat maps of people going, not every retailer, but a lot of them do. They know the people that are coming into their store, that decision-making unit has gone this direction. Well, why don't we put products at the till or in certain strategic parts of the store, A-B test it, see will it drive revenue. Then it will start suggesting as they're in the store. And a really great example of this is a Pet Stop. They had they wanted to look at every facet of the business. And one of them was, we were at this, can you identify particular parts of our business that are underperforming?
Yeah.
And the AI picked out their dog grooming. They have dog grooming in store. And they were like, hang on a second, that's our highest margin. That's our most profitable part of our business.
Sure.
And we said, correct. But what the AI is pointing out here is that you have no upsell. You have people, like I go in to get my dog groomed. It's going to cost like between 40 and 50 pounds to get the dog's haircut, more than I spend on my own haircut. I'm usually there 5 minutes before, and I'll be there 10 minutes early to collect. And I'm typically there with one of the kids. So why isn't somebody in the store coming over to me to say, oh, by the way, do you realize today we've got a special on? If you buy that dog food, we bundle it with a collar, or you can get a dog treat, or you can get a something with that. Then you're actually, because this is somebody coming in that's spending this amount of money, they have a higher disposable income. You should be targeting them with like upselling and cross-selling them other products in a nice way. To say we have a sale on, we see your dog, it's a white, whatever, you know, Bichon Frise, here's a particular dog food that you should have. And by the way, there's 15% off today. Well, thanks. I may make another impulse purchase because I'm already spending that money. So it went from them thinking this is the biggest margin to say, we should be getting more out of that.
It's a really interesting point, because I admit, when I think about this, I think about how do you prop up categories that aren't growing, right? How do you deal with categories that are in decline? Whereas what you're saying is right. It's like how do you get the most out of the horses that are running, and you know, going down that road and looking at the growth and maximizing that growth instead. And I think, you know, that's potentially something really powerful for retailers. What kind of impact does this have on the consumer experience? What kind of change could consumers see, I guess, or you know, is there an opportunity for, if I'm a convenience retailer, to turn my store into something that gives a more personalized experience?
Well, it'll begin to learn the shopping habits of your customers. Now, what helps is naturally if you have a loyalty scheme or you've got some type of card they can tap, so suddenly you know, hang on, it's Chris. He's come through the door. He's this type of client. You can enhance the experience. Some of our clients have changed the layout of their stores based on, you know, if somebody's coming in for a product and it's like a shampoo, then they may also, based on all the other buying habits we've seen from this particular product, you need to bundle other products near it so they don't have to walk to the other end of the store. This thing sounds simple, but it's not simple. Sure. You know, common sense, as they say, is not that common. And when you're busy trying to run your business, you might just miss that. Whereas if you have another data-driven opinion, and you might say, no, that's actually not right, which is fair enough. But a lot of the time, it will be right to make it more convenient. And then building the picture, which is very rich for clients, is that you will have, you know, some of our clients could be 30% online, 70% in store. You know, they've got an e-commerce business they have, and it's easier to track it online because, you know, typically they'll know who you are because you'll log in and they'll know you're, but making proper recommendations, not just pure Shopify-driven recommendations. Mm. And then when that person arrives in store and they, you know, they get their phone and they beep their loyalty card, that should be pinged in front of the person that's there to say, this is a VIP person. They buy online. They're now in store.
Sure.
Here's their buying. So they have that information there in whatever handheld they have in the store to help them improve that experience, to see what they've bought in the past and to, you know, welcome them back to the store, to give them that type of just a better customer experience.
Yeah. I think that's, it's something that is such a huge growth area in our sector, because I mean, we've seen some of the larger businesses do very well in terms of loyalty and get a huge amount of data. I mean, obviously, one of the early ones of those would be Tesco with the club card, and then sort of Sainsbury's and Nectar, and they're pretty much everywhere with the malts now. But for smaller retailers, it feels like there isn't something in that space, and it might be that AI can bridge that gap, and even perhaps without loyalty, with, you know, things like facial recognition and knowing when the same customers are coming in and what they're buying, because we can't really capture that at the moment. It's really interesting from a retail perspective when I talk to retailers, because obviously there's a huge amount that this kind of stuff can do. There is, however, a concern that there are some businesses that claim to be AI, and what they actually are is just quite big spreadsheets. How can retailers tell? How can you tell the difference? Because from a sort of front end point of view, you go, oh, I'll put this software in, and it's spitting out all these recommendations for me, but it's not necessarily actually learning anything. How can you avoid those pitfalls?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. If it's not learning and it's not getting better and it's not giving you deeper insights, well, then it's probably like what we would call a rules-based engine. It's just like, yes, no, it's making decisions. But if it's able to show you its thinking, to say, here's why we think you should do this, you know, because of X, Y, and Z, then you're like, okay, this is something beyond just a, like, that I could do myself.
Sort of decision engine.
Through pivot tables. And explainable AI is a really important piece here, because you can actually, like, the power to sit down as a retailer and say, I would like to know, based on what I have in stock today, what are my items that I need to move, and what do I need, what's the best way to promote them in store, where should I put them in store to either reduce my inventory levels, or if we're predicting that a certain SKU begins to go and begins to sell, or we're seeing a sudden drive, or we're predicting a sudden increase, then it should send an alert to you to say, you need to order that because you're going to continue to see the growth. And the beauty for retailers is, you know, try it. You know, a lot of the times we say, look, we give a money back guarantee, try it for 3 months. If it's not working, like, that's fine, because it's a light touch. You know, we've done it with a lot of retailers. It's not a huge capital outlay for most of them, but it's an investment in their future, because I can guarantee if you're not doing it, your competitor is probably doing it.
Yeah.
You know, because off sales is another big area that just came to mind, that we're doing a lot of work with a wholesaler at the other side. Their challenge was they got 25,000 orders a week coming from 1,200 retailers. But yet, some of the retailers, they would be branded under their particular brand. There's many examples here in the UK. But off sales, if somebody walks in to a store, and because somebody is filling out that weekly or monthly order to go to the wholesaler to get it delivered, and they forget something, like, and somebody walks in to get a Coke Zero, you don't have it, they're going to walk across the road and they're going to be annoyed. And the chances of them coming back, they could be great or they could be slim.
Yeah.
You have lost a potential sale. That is the worst case for most retailers. So to automate that, automate your ordering, because you will have lots of data on your buying patterns based on the time of year, based on lots of things. But there's another example that an AI should create that weekly order for you with your oversight at the end. Instead of having to create it, you're like, okay, yeah, like that. Like, okay, click, send, done.
Yeah.
And then when you get more comfortable with it, just automate it totally. And then just focus on customers coming in your door.
So we talked about retailers. We talked a little bit about consumers. There's a third part of this in terms of the people involved, our colleagues in stores. And there's a lot of talk in different sectors of, and I've seen big lists of the jobs most at risk by AI, right? And we'd see this week Tilly Norwood, the AI actress, coming up and, you know, potentially taking Emily Blunt's job in the future because she can be anywhere at any time and all that sort of thing. There are 443 colleagues in the convenience sector. How worried should any of those be about these kind of decision engines and learning models taking jobs in the sector?
I would say not that worried. This is a high-touch, personal type of business that you're connecting with a lot of your customers. Like, to put it into context, and I spoke on this earlier today at another event, is that AI cannot understand the context of the human world. You know, the most powerful large language model that people would be familiar with would be ChatGPT. It's free, you can use a certain, you know, you can test it, use it, see the power of it. From a data perspective, it has seen the same amount of data as a four-year-old child.
Right, sure.
So Okay. That's where we are. And this particular conversation, what we're doing in a room recording a podcast, AI cannot understand that today. Maybe in 10 years it can. What it can understand is numbers, is language. It is extremely good. Those problems are solved. The context of a real world experience. Why does somebody walk into your store, turn left, turn right, go down this aisle, pick up something, walk back, forgot the bread, pick up the bread, then walk down the end, oh, I need to get something for the kids' lunches. All of this behavior, it cannot, it has no context, cannot understand the gray of our lives. And we all live in, like, there's nothing black and white in the real world. So that was 100% not there yet. And I think the fact...
So interesting you say yet. Do you think it could be the case in a few years that it gets to a point where it understands why people might even, you know, pick something up and then put it back down? You know, it might understand that period of time where someone's thinking about a decision and be able to influence that in real time. Is that too far ahead to be thinking?
Look, that's real future gazing. It could be 10 years, it could be 20 years, it could be 5 years away.
Right.
But how do you then deliver that experience? Do you put a screen? Is it a humanoid robot that Tesla are building? Is that really where retail wants to go? You know, I know that, you know, McDonald's have deployed those screens that we've all used.
Yeah.
Their revenue was up 11% since they put them in.
Right.
Okay. But they were smart, but there was a reason behind putting them in, is that a lot of people don't like going to the counter and, can I get an extra large portion of fries with a large milkshake, with a double whatever, Mac, whatever it is. They don't like doing that, but they'll do it to a screen. So some parts will probably be automated, or the option will be there, as they are in a lot of convenience stores. Check out yourself. I mean, Amazon are playing with it. They've totally walk in, pick up anything and walk out the door.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because self-service tills now are in 18% of convenience stores. It's the same kind of concept in that it's almost like a sort of no shame service.
Yes,
in that, you know, you don't have to justify those decisions to the self-service till.
Yeah, because we're all human at the end of the day, you know. And but have that option there. Like, by all means, you should have that option there, because this again will build, and the data that will come from that self-service till, I guarantee you, will be totally different than the data that comes from the physical till. And you might see totally different products that especially teenagers might buy, or might be too embarrassed to ask somebody for, you know, certain product lines. But you'll see that data and you'll see, okay, that's actually working. Maybe I should put in two of those.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, sure. And potentially with the advent of, you know, digital ID, and, you know, there's a lot of controversy around that, but it's certainly got to be the direction of travel, in that we'll get to a point where there doesn't need to be human intervention to verify someone's identification. Then you've got a completely I guess, shame-free experience with self-service without it having to be, you know, like a sort of Amazon just walk out tech. It can be just a self-service till in the store.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that like future. I mean, they're ubiquitous across most convenience stores and convenience locations, I would say right now.
Yeah, absolutely right. There's another issue that retailers have been wrestling with over the last few years is around GDPR, data privacy, particularly when it comes to CCTV and facial recognition, and particularly around crime and what they do with naming and shaming criminals and that kind of thing. As a wider point about, you said this is huge amount of data and can look at things like CCTV and you know all the data. How much of a concern should privacy and transparency be for retailers looking to utilize AI in their business? Is it something that they should be worried about, or is it something that you guys are worried about?
Well, it's something they should definitely be aware of. Mm-hmm. Is that there's certain guidelines, and I do think the UK, when it comes to regulation, have gotten this right. You know, there is UK GDPR rules. You cannot, but there are many other tools out there that can take the shape of people coming into your store. So if you have a shape that would possibly identify as male, one as female, and then two other smaller blobs, that's probably a family unit that just walked in your door. Mm. And then they'll heat map them around your store to see where they're, how they were kind of walking through your store, where they're stopping, what they're purchasing, connected to your when they're checking out. But you don't get that picture unless you have that system connected into a machine learning model. So they should be very aware of, and any vendors they're looking at from an AI perspective, what's their data governance, their data policy, security, all of the GDPR compliance, essential for any retailer to consider. But there is lots of protections there already, you know, and the UK have taken the approach that it will be governed by the existing agencies within the government. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of the law is in place, and AI is just another technology that can't break these laws. Now, some companies choose to break them, but they'll be found out.
Sure. And if they're, as we're just coming to a close, if you could give retailers advice, and I'm sure there'll be lots of questions in a couple of weeks as we're recording this, when we get to the Innovation Showcase in Manchester, lots of retailers there, lots of retailers, top quartile retailers, very interested in this kind of technology. If there was one kind of must-have integration that if you were to look 12 months from now and say, look, if you don't have this in place, you're probably going to get left behind, or you're leaving a lot on the table, what would that be?
You need a single source of truth for your business. You can't be relying on whether it's internal people or external people reviewing your revenue lines, your operating expenditure lines, giving you reports. You need to have access to that data directly and then visualized to you in a way that you want to see it based on your KPIs. If you don't have that in your business, then you don't know where you're going. Like, if you don't know where you're going, you're just never going to get there. And that is essential for any resellers. As a simple starting point, show me what's happening right now and show me where I'm going to be in 3 months. And then in 3 months, they can look back and say, you guys were bang on or you guys were wrong.
Sure.
Because that is the beauty about the data. It is predictive, and it's either going to be in your data or it's not.
Sure. And if any retailer is looking to take the first steps on that journey with Galvia, how do they do that? What's the first step?
The first step, I mean, we run a series of retail accelerators where we have a one-on-one sessions with clients. And we, what's really important is to get under the hood to say, to look at your business and say, okay, what is the art of possible and not possible? To ground it in practical truths, show them, like talk. If you're looking at engaging any vendor in the space, ask them, well, can you show me what you've done for other similar retailers in my space? How have you impacted their bottom line? And if, like, we get a lot of our existing customers to talk to potential customers, because it is change. Nobody runs towards change with open arms to say, thank you for coming in, changing my business. But in 3 months' time, suddenly it's like as if the lights go on.
They forget it. Yeah.
As one of my CEOs, now I understand. I can ask for anything. And if trying to get that mindset, I would like to know the correlation between what's in the warehouse and what promotions I should run next month in order to maximize the margin in my business. And it'll go away and come back with answers. right there at your fingertips, on your phone, on your iPad.
Okay, so part of it is asking good questions, right?
Yeah, but even, like, it's not even, a lot of them don't know the questions that they have to ask.
Sure.
They need to be prompted. It'll start prompting you based on what we've learned from all the other retailers. And it's only going to get smarter and faster. And that is the future for a lot of AI. It's not the big, big players. It's not the purview of the huge players in this world. It's the middle ground, smaller players. It's smaller models, lighter, leaner, better for the environment, better for people, lower cost to run, very efficient. That's going to be the future of AI in the next 5 to 10 years.
Great. Well, John, this feels almost like the start of a conversation rather than the end of it. And we'll hear more from you at the Innovation and NPD Showcase in Manchester on the 21st of October. But until then, really appreciate it and thank you for your time.
Great. And thank you.